This is The Hoof of the Horse, a podcast dedicated to farrowy, hoof care and equine science with Dr. Simon Curtis. For this episode, we are sponsored by the Hoof Care Essentials Foundation and their partners, Soft Ride Boots.
Well, there was quite a few firsts in this upcoming podcast. I had four of us in a room, which is more than I've had before for a podcast, and that, of course, might well have challenged my audio recording abilities, but that's for you to judge. We also did more of a technical podcast than often, in that I wasn't really interviewing somebody in the hoof care industry to find out about their life and then go into technical issues. The reason we did this podcast was four of us got together to carry out a dissection. None of us, of course, are pathologists. We're all farriers. And we did this at the Rossdale Postmortem Room in Newmarket, England. And then afterwards, after we'd carried out quite an extensive five-hour look at four legs, and especially the feet of one horse, we then found a quiet meeting room and went on to record this podcast. The three other guys helping me and in the team, two of them were ex-apprentices of mine, one of them from a very, very long time ago. Well, both of them quite experienced farriers now, and a colleague who I pulled in because I knew his interest and expertise would be of a great help. You'll be introduced to them in the podcast. We were looking at three things. The main reason we got together was because of the opportunity to look at canker in a case, and certainly canker in 4 feet, although far, far more progressed in the hind feet. And of course, canker is described, well, in many ways, but usually nowadays as a progressive pododermatitis with absent cornification. So in other words, the sensitive tissue, the dermal tissue, is growing at an accelerated rate, and it doesn't seem to turn into horn or produce horn in the usual way. It is associated with humidity and warm countries, hot countries, and the drier the climate, the less likely you are to see it. But it wasn't just canker that we got the chance to have a look at. We explored one of the feet which had diagnosed as having a lesion to the distal sesamoid, to the tendon surface. So we wanted to have a look at that. And then the other thing we did, that by coincidence we had heard about the mysterious tendon, the Phillipsian tendon, which doesn't seem to be really recognised or noted most textbooks or textbooks I know. And so we went looking for that, and you'll find out whether we found it or not. Anyway, it was a great opportunity, and I hope the podcast reflects that. Well, I've got an unusual podcast to do today because we're at Rossdale's. I'm with four other farriers, and you might say we've had an away day or a play day, but what we've really done is we've been looking at a canker case. We've had four cadaver feet to look at, and we're going to discuss what we found. So, welcome to the podcast, all of you.
Thank you.
If you're not on podcast, Rich, nobody can see it, okay? All right, so I'll start with you, Stephen. We've got Stephen Hill here. Just give us briefly a background, your story as a farrier.
Started locally to here, actually, with Stephen Gowin at Soham when I was 17, and passed my diploma in 98, passed my associate in 2000, went on to pass my fellowship in, I want to say, 18, 19. I can't really remember.
I think you mean 2018.
I shoot predominantly hunters in Rutland and Leicestershire, and eventers in the summer, but I also do everything from donkeys and quite a lot of heavy horses still.
And you have an interest in? dissection and anatomy, which is why we've dragged you in here.
Yes, yeah. Somehow I've ended up doing dissections and I quite like it.
Yeah. Okay, Gavin, tell us something about your background, Gavin Moody.
Well, I'm from Newmarket originally, and I started when I was 16 with you. Yeah. I qualified in 99. In 2003, I became an ATF, and I've trained quite a few apprentices since then. I would run what you could describe as a multifarrier business. There's four apprentices and two qualifieds at the moment.
Plus you.
Plus me. And I do just about all racehorses, and I have been my whole career. And I've recently just passed my associate exam.
I think congratulations.
Coincidentally, one of my examiners is in the room.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you. I noticed you passing over a fiver. So, okay, Richard, your background.
Right, I trained with yourself, obviously.
Yeah.
From Mansfield area, moved back to Mansfield. Do pretty much any type of even goat's feet, whatever needs doing.
Goats.
So
mate.
I just a general whatever needs doing. Farrier.
You do enough shoeing to keep you off the golf course, but not too much.
Not too much. That's just about right. Yes.
So you're even golfing tomorrow, aren't you?
I am indeed. You've got to get home quick. Got to get back for a golf tomorrow.
Okay.
Beats working.
Right. So we've got quite a team here, but the main reason we got this job and this opportunity is because one of your clients, Richard.
It is indeed.
So tell us about, without giving names away, but.
So I inherited this job because another farrier had gone to hospital originally. It had already had two surgeries prior. So shot it as best we could for probably 8 months to a year before we finally got to a sedation with a vet, tourniquets, nerve blocks, etc. And we cut out, so we thought, everything in both back feet, 3 hours of surgery. Very impressive job, type, you know. And then due to something else.
And you were assisting? Hoof knife? Scalpel?
Hoof knife, no scalpel, but hoof
knife. Let the vet use the scalpel.
Yeah,
did
vet on scalpel, me on hoof knife. Didn't realise I was a surgeon till that day, whilst holding up a heavy horse. Then due to a cyst on the navicular bone in the right fore, the horse was going to have to be put down at some point. So it was treated differently, which then the canker came back as well. So, but the owners were, after fighting this for 4 or 5 years, were also interested to find things out, which is why I contacted yourself, and we
met halfway, didn't we?
We met halfway.
I don't know, how far apart do we live?
Well, not quite halfway. We met at Newark,
yeah,
where his legs were given to
us. So are you about 150 miles north of here, are you?
120, I think.
Okay.
So not too far.
Yeah.
And then we said, I'm very interested, because on the back of this, never having seen anything like this for 30 years as a farrier, I've now looked at three others in the last 3 years, so something
with a
lack of knowledge on it needs to be looked at.
It is rare in the UK, but so I don't know why there's an epidemic in Nottinghamshire, I don't know.
Well, one came down from Manchester.
So. Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah.
So that's the background story, so that gave us a chance to look at this,
yep.
And I met you, we got the legs, handed them over like contraband.
Yep.
And then I took them to Gavin's forge, didn't I? Because you've got a freezer.
Yeah. Yeah,
and there they have sat for 6 months.
And luckily they haven't been used for by any of the apprentices.
No, well, that was always a worry because your freezer has cadaver legs so that apprentices can practice on them.
Yes.
But anyway, so they survived that, and you took them out yesterday.
Yeah.
and to defrost, and I think they were perfectly defrosted, weren't they? So,
yep.
A bit of shoemaking helped.
Yeah, well, the fire was going nearby, wasn't it? Yeah. So we did that, and basically I called you, or I texted you, Stephen, didn't I? I said, are you interested? And that's how we got this together. So we got the legs out this morning, and we have actually spent about 5 hours on it, I think. So let's move into to what we found. So they were four relatively different cadaver legs, weren't they? They were cut off just below the carpus and the tarsus. So what were the differences then, Stephen?
The canker was certainly more evident in the hind feet, and the horse was obviously standing on one side of its foot more, so we could, when we were looking at them, we could see that the canker was definitely sided in both the hind feet.
But even from a solo view, you could see, couldn't you, that it had a bias to one side.
Yeah, they were very asymmetrical, obviously not bearing weight evenly, so whether that was compensatory, it could well be from what we found.
Actually, one thing I've forgotten to do, we haven't actually discussed what canker is. So, who wants to go off on that? Gavin, what's the best description of what canker is?
An equine, a destructive equine condition of the, that originates in the frog and affects the caudal hoof.
There we go. So, I think the old-fashioned name, well, the name canker implies that it's a cancer, but it's not thought to be that now, is it, Steve?
No, it's an autoimmune
response,
yes. We now believe that treatment for the inside has to be done to achieve success, regardless of what you do on the outside. If you don't treat the autoimmune, you have to, they're usually unsuccessful in this group.
So what's it normally said to look like?
Finger-like projections, excessive thrush.
And that all the old books always seem to say cauliflower. I don't know, they always picked on vegetables and food. It didn't look much like cauliflower this, did it? Well, I don't know how you cook cauliflower.
I'm going to struggle to eat cauliflower after what I've seen today.
But what's the other thing? I thought you might have mentioned the other symptom.
The smell.
The smell. And we all suffered from that, didn't we, team?
We did.
Yes.
In fact,
I suffered from that while it was live.
Oh dear, yeah. Yeah, it's a very distinctive smell. Like most smells, how do you describe them? But once smelt, never forgotten, eh?
That's the one.
So we've got the canker. The other thing is that it's often linked to pemphigus, which is another, pemphigus follicaceus, which is another autoimmune response, isn't it? Which I think is more linked to coronitis and stuff like that. I was looking at the coronary bands, and I probably should have taken some better pictures. I think there was a little bit of that around the coronary band.
Yeah, the one thing we did notice, there was a finger-like projection that was coming out between the bulbs of the heels.
A horn, wasn't it?
Horn, yeah. Which we tried to locate the source of. But the feet were quite deformed and dysfunctional because of the excessive growth in various areas. And yeah, it was very bizarre. It's actually the first canker case I've ever seen.
Okay. It was first for all of us, because it's certainly the first I'd dissected, and there was things that we learnt along the way. But, so, how did we start then? What was the first project? The best way to start when you don't know what you're doing?
We started with the least affected foot.
We did, yes. We had a pilot, didn't we?
Yeah.
To make sure if we messed it up, we had a second go.
We hadn't messed it. I know, it's very tempting to dive in and do the worst foot, but we did the one which, it did have enough. I mean, with your gloved hand, poked your finger right the way through to the back of the foot up. I think we found afterwards you probably were going into the plantar cushion. No, that's the front one, so the palmar cushion. And that was extensive enough. But we did that as a peel off the hoof wall and peel off the sole, didn't we?
Yes.
Yep.
So, and I know you've done that before.
Yeah.
So what's the best way to do that? Stephen?
I find if they're not boiled, it can be quite difficult. So separating the sole from the hoof wall, so cutting at a 45 degree angle around the distal border of the hoof until you expose the junction between the lamina and the sole, and you get mugged at that stage. And then I start at one heel, cut around the corner, around the skin, just to make it easier. And then I use my trimmers on one heel to be able to get the buttress away from the lamina, and then keep pulling and pulling in a vice and peel the hoof.
Yeah, fortunately you've got a couple of strong colleagues and a relatively good vice, but it was still quite hard work. Anything ever teaches you how strong that laminal bond is, you know, on a horse that's diseased, dead, and it's still been in a freezer for 6 months, still took some getting off, didn't it?
I thought the feet were really strong. They were, I don't know what type of horse it was. It was an Irish cross.
Yeah, an Irish sports horse, cob cross type of horse.
You could obviously tell that the feet would, without the canker, the feet would have been really strong. The bulbs of the heels and the buttresses were very close together. The heels were wrapped right on. It would have been a nightmare to apply a shoe to.
They were tough trim in the summer. When it was hard. So definitely hard for you.
Yeah. You contracted more because of taking away the pain of standing on the frog.
Yeah, we felt that the lateral side on all the feet was the most affected, and we would have said that the lateral side was higher, and the inside were shunted and slightly more crushed. And we felt that the levered away the hoof wall, certainly in the heel quarters, on the hind feet, which...
Well, we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
We're going to get to that, because we also got a slight distraction. How long have I known you, Stephen?
Since my apprenticeship.
And you go off at a tangent at times, don't you?
Has been known.
And Gavin made the mistake, knowing your interest in anatomy and dissection, of showing a German book which showed a mysterious third tendon, didn't it? Extensor tendon.
Yes.
And you suddenly lost a little bit of interest in the canker, and you said, no, I'm going to find this tendon.
I did find it, Gavin's help.
You did, and of course the book actually said it doesn't exist in every case.
Not in every case, no. I think it was called, was it the Philip Shum muscle tendon?
Yeah, that's correct.
And it sort of runs parallel to the lateral extensor tendon?
In between the lateral and the common.
So there we are. Any of you practicing for your diploma or associate, that's put you in two minds, hasn't it? Because you don't know whether to get asked on them or not. But anyway, that was one distraction. The other, and it was great fun doing that. So I've got pictures of that, and I meant to say that hopefully we'll get some videos and pictures come out with this podcast. The other thing was, of course, we wanted to track about this case, the front foot that had diagnosed a lesion on the navicular bone, didn't we, Richard?
Yes, we did. We wanted to find
that. That, I think you might be able to get me some radiographs.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, because...
I'll sort that.
So that was your job next, wasn't it, Stephen, to try and dig deep without damaging the navicular bone.
So we could have a look at it. To access the navicular bone in a strong-footed horse and... but we got there in the end.
Yeah, well, I would say I've seen your dissections in the past, and you do some great dissections, but I think you need to practice the technique of digging in. I think coming in from the back might have been a...
Yeah, I think we all forget how connected every piece in the foot is with each other. I think we've tried not to damage that and just trying to access it with the pedal bone in the way, the wings of the pedal bone and so on. It was just proving quite difficult.
No, well, of course, there's no point in us trying to get it out to look at, see what damage there is to it if we create damage on it. So it was difficult. What did we see then, Gavin, when it came out?
On the navicular, there was like a lesion on the tendon surface there, and a sort of roughened area you could feel with your fingers, even with your gloves on, around where the foramen would be on that surface there.
And you put it next to, Stephen, didn't you, the bone, so I could get a photograph next to the tendon. It was interesting, the tendon as well, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. You could see where the roughened area had created a discoloration. The tendon, we like to see it, a yellowy, white, creamy colour, and it's actually pink and slightly fleshy where the tendon had passed over the lesion.
Yeah. The other thing that was striking was just how wide that tendon is at that point. It was just about as wide as the navicular bone, wasn't it?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And when it fans out past the navicular bone, even wider, I would say.
Yeah, where it inserts into the bottom of the distal phalanx. Okay, so we had that. As I say, that was something we wanted to look at, and we looked at that. And then, so now we'd got the two hind feet, the most affected with the canker, and we went about exploring them in two ways. Richard and I decided to go for a sagittal section, and then we quartered it to see what we could see from that point of view, and hopefully to get a couple of nice specimens. And from your point of view, you and Gavin decided to go and you did a peel again. You peeled the hoof wall off, peeled the sole off, and had a look at it that way, didn't you? But it was interesting, the peeling the wall away on your one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. As you got round to one side, it was, you'd say, totally separated.
Yeah, it was necrotic.
It was necrotic tissue there. There was no blood supply at all, and it's hard to imagine how the horse would have even bared any weight there at all without the solar side just collapsing.
Yeah, and I mean, you did say it when you described it there, and it is described as, we all think it attacks the frog, which it does. It's the normal primary,
origin
area, you know, of where it attacks it. And then, but it does go out under the sole. But this showed how much, when it is said that it attacks the hoof wall. This was round at the quarter, wasn't it?
Yeah, right round the quarter, right.
No living, I know it's a cadaver, but no healthy tissue at all, was it?
No.
Totally unattached.
Up to the where the toenail would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty that far.
And I wasn't watching you peel that off because we were doing our thing. You didn't get to that point and then...
Gav shot across the room.
I wondered.
It did come off a lot easier all of a sudden, didn't it?
Yeah.
We were pulling it along and then suddenly it just...
Because I've seen that with that method anyway, where suddenly, even, you know, with a healthy hoof wall, because it's such an effort to peel it off, that you get to that point where it lets go and you're nearly on the floor. But anyway, well done. And so that was really quite special. And then you took the sole off.
Yeah.
And even the frog, it was mushy, wasn't it? The sensitive frog was just mush.
What we wanted to do, we didn't take the sole off the second one. We wanted to cut away to see actually if this was a live horse and we were there to treat it, how deep we would have to go.
Yeah.
And we had about 3 inches of sole in the medial toe aspect that was left in there, and it was coming out like ice cream. You just pull it out with your finger, and then there was still the finger-like bits of horn that were slightly harder, which was surrounded by this, and it just amazed me at how deep it went and how much you had to take, and we probably would have had to take more to clean up, to help the horse.
I mean, I think that's one of the things I took from it, that I knew it was a severe case, you'd only got to look at those hooves, but it was just how much damage inside had been done. That's really what I took from this.
And we may find, when that P3's boiled, more damage.
Oh, of course, yes, good reminder, so, Rich. So we've tried to preserve a couple of specimens, but the distal phalanx, still covered in the lamellae and other attachments, but that's going to be boiled, and we're going to have a look to see if there's any damage to the distal phalanx. There may be, but certainly it was the damage to the rest of the hoof capsule that stunned me, actually.
Incredible.
So, right, I'm going to go around the table. Yeah, Stephen, what?
We have heard it spoke about before with the hair follicles sticking up on the coronary bank. But we did look at all 4 feet, and we didn't actually see...
That's normally pemphigus that does that, right, as I understand it, but... As I say, they're so closely associated, they never really used to be differentiated up until recently. And that's when people say, oh, they get canker on the chestnut, I actually think that's probably not true. It's the pemphigus that's doing the chestnut, as I understand it now. But it's, it's still almost a mystery because it doesn't happen so often. And that's why we took a chance like this to do it. So, I'm going to go around the table and ask you all what you took most from this and and what you thought of the learning experience?
Thoroughly enjoyed it. most of it. It is fairly disgusting. You can't actually describe how bad it is. The surprise with the damage, that's the biggest thing for me. Obviously, the fill, whatever, tendon, I'll take that home and I'll be finding that again. And that will be mentioned in future dissections. But it was great for me to find have a pedal bone with a lesion because we have something to look at. Whereas a lot of the time when I've done dissection, you don't actually have something to look at. You just do the generic thing. So for me, this is great having a purpose and the severity of...
We were proper pathologists today, weren't we?
You even took some...
Well, you three were, but I was just... I was recording. What did you take from this then, Gavin?
Well, we also noticed that the digital cushion looked very pitted and stringy in places. I would have liked to have seen a healthy one at the same time to see if what I imagined it was like, it was really pitted and everything. But from what I've read, they usually look a lot better than that, the fibro-fatty material of them. So there was that. And also that if it was a client that had come to me and said, how do we treat this? And you start thinking about treating it from the outside, seeing how extensively it went into the hoof capsule and all round the lamellae, that would have done absolutely nothing. So my whole view on how far it extends into the hoof capsule, I wouldn't have thought it was that much. Yeah, it was really quite gross.
Yeah, I think we all agreed on that. I think, as I say, I have smelt it before, and it wasn't an enjoyable revisit to that smell. What about you, Rich? What do you take from this?
Well, obviously, having done the case...
You know the horse, don't you?
Knowing the horse, etc. And obviously the owners wanted some information. I think, obviously, the work I did firstly, taking it away and getting to where we thought was good, whether it was or wasn't, whether it's reappeared or we didn't quite get it all, to actually see probably in 12 to 18 months what has happened again is incredible. And I think with what we've still got to look at, we could be on the way to a few answers, hopefully, which is all going to be good.
Well, before I forget, I would like you to pass on our thanks to the owners because, somebody loses a horse, they're sentimentally attached, and you say, can I cut the legs off? And
it was actually their idea, which made it easier for me. And I suppose on behalf of them, I'd like to thank you guys as well.
No, it's been a great experience. Also, of course, Rossdale's using their facilities and
fantastic.
Their help and doing it in a proper post-mortem room. It was great, and they've been so helpful. And it was a good bit of teamwork, wasn't it? I mean, we discussed at each point how we were going to go about it. If we'd have had one foot, we might have been... Well, we could have made a mistake. So we were lucky in that.
Yeah.
That we had a practice foot, and then we had three other feet that we really needed to have a good look at.
Three different ways of looking at them.
Yeah.
Which gives you different angles of views. Working together, saying, what do you think? Should we look here? Should we look there?
And hopefully we'll get the distal phalanx boiled out. I've got a couple of specimens that I put in formalin, so they're preserved, I hope, for all time. And so we've gained loads of stuff out of it.
Yeah.
Lots of photos and videos.
Yeah, I was doing that non-stop. I think it's going to take me half a year to try and put them in some sort of logical order, but I'll do my best. And
your busy schedule.
Well, these sort of things pop up every now and again, and so...
We need to try and get hold of them.
We wouldn't have been out to do this tomorrow because Rich would have been on the golf course.
Oh, exactly.
So
life's too short.
Definitely.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Well, that was certainly a case of having fun while learning. But on top of that, of course, dissection always makes the understanding of anatomy and probably more importantly, physiology and function come alive. So all of us got a lot out of it. I'm hoping to get videos and photos out as well. So not only can you listen to this podcast, you'll be able to have a look at what we found and what we did. Finally, I need to thank my colleagues, Stephen Hill, Gavin Moody and Richard Maltby-Smith, for not only taking part in this dissection and really enthusiastically helping, but also giving up their time for the podcast. And of course, I must thank again Ross Downs for their post-mortem room, and also to the owners and for allowing us to carry out this dissection on their horse. I hope you enjoyed the podcast as much as we enjoyed taking part in the dissection. Okay, anything I should have asked or anything any of you would like to add to our story?
My knowledge of canker comes from a veterinary examiner for the Wetherill Company, a chap called Gil Riley, who many of you may know. He's a top man, very quietly spoken Irishman. Love his company. And he actually gave me his treatment plan. So excuse me when I read off his treatment plan and pronounce these things wrong. Prednisolone daily, 1 milligram per kilogram. Abaxial sesamoid nerve block on affected limb. Apply tourniquet at fetlock and reset cankerous tissue as fully as possible. Dress foot in Gamgee pad with metronidazole, antibiotic versus anaerobic bacteria. Paste and Caniston antifungal cream. Keep the bone dry, stable. Redress every 3 days using the same antibiotic antifungal agents each time. Should resolve in around 3 weeks on average, but continue prednisolone tablets for the additional fortnight after healed.
Okay, well, for anybody listening, that's an up-to-date treatment from I know Gil very well, so from a very accomplished veterinary surgeon.
I'll just tell you a story. He was examining hires, and he asked the question about canker. One of the examiners asked the question about canker, and the candidate came back with a very good answer, more than I could have shared.
Yeah, but when you get to higher level, I know this is off subject. I always used to say, you know, examiners can't be expected to know everything. But the trick is to shut them up before you don't know whether they're bullshitting or just good.
Too true.
I might even have that edited out, actually. does anything else come to mind for you two? Have we covered everything?
Pretty much when we did the surgery resection of the canker.
Yeah.
I'm not sure entirely, but I could find out. But that's pretty much the sort of things we use, the treatment we use thereafter. But also with tissue, not knowing whether if anything looked like it may not be healthy tissue coming back, we applied a cancer cream, which will only affect bad tissue, not good tissue,
yeah,
not healthy tissue. So that was another thing we did on top of that, just in case.
Yeah.
And as we thought, we did have pretty good results for period of time, but with the immune system potentially this cancer is just going to keep recurring because of something else inside.
We'll never know, but at least some good has come out of this. Unless you have anything to add, Gavin?
I could just remember, apart from one of your books, actually, I don't know who the author is of the section of canker there, but it says for the final bit of treatment about canker, it says post-surgery cyst plating chemotherapy, which I don't know what cyst plating is either, but that is the
I don't think we have time in this podcast for me to explain that. So listen, we have only one more task, team.
Afflic Arms.
We are going to go to the Afflic Arms. But what's the thing we're going to do before we go to the Athletic Arms? Wash our hands again.
And blow right. Our noses.
Okay, chaps.
We'd like to thank Hoofcare Essentials Foundation and their partners for sponsoring this episode. You can find out more information at hoofcareessentials.com. You can follow more of Simon's work on Instagram and Facebook at Dr. Simon Curtis. To get in contact, please email thehoofofthehorse@gmail.com. And for everything else, go to drsimoncurtis.com. Thanks for listening.